Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timory.
Have you broken your New Year's resolution yet? That's the question. I haven't, Timory, and there's a very good reason why.
Did you set one?
I didn't even make any. Oh, is that terrible?
I didn't make any either, Don.
Wow, really?
I know.
What's wrong with us?
You know, I even kind of felt like, man, maybe I should make a New Year's resolution. Maybe I should. But it's so uninspiring to me. And maybe I'm just being like, we're Catholic. It's Christmas. And we make a bigger deal about amending our lives in the new year than we do about Christ coming. And so I know some people will be like, oh, yeah, you're saying that. You're Catholic because you have to say that. But like you sit there on New Year's Eve and you're like, we're just waiting for it to be midnight so we can go to bed.
Yeah, I'm of two minds on this because in the past, I have made New Year's resolutions and some of them have been very successful. And some of my New Year's have been, you know, a turning point where I have taken stock and said, all right, this happened in the past year or whatever, or I've come this far and I need to make a change. And this year just wasn't one of those years. I think it just depends on your situation in life. I don't want to denigrate New Year's resolutions. In fact, we'll talk about some great uses of them.
Right.
On the other hand, I think you and I are examples that we don't believe that you have to make one every single year.
Right. And I think that the idea of the New Year's resolution is an awesome opportunity, maybe for those of us who aren't easily inspired to make changes in our lives, to do something. And, you know, I even had to stop and I was feeling bad, like, okay, I didn't really make a New Year's resolution and it needs to be something concrete. But I had to look back and it's like, am I in a rut and am I being lazy and not wanting to do something? And so I kind of looked back on the last year and had to start thinking, is there anything I changed about myself, how I interact, the things I do? And I realized there were some really big things. I mean, one of the big things was I grew up dancing my whole life. I love to dance. And it got to the point where it was tough for me even to talk about dance because I missed it so much. And, you know, I had tried, but just I couldn't make the time. Or when I was in grad school and everything, I didn't make the time, you know, more so couldn't at the time. But last year I started dancing again and it's been a huge part of my life and, you know, different parts of growing in the faith life too, you know, understanding more about the idea of fasting and the importance of abstinence, abstaining from certain foods in your life and how it challenges us to then abstain from certain behaviors. You know, those were things that I could say I did last year and I'm proud of. So I shouldn't try to maybe force something if I'm not really feeling something's right just yet, but be inspired to make changes still.
Yeah, if it is, like you said, if it's a result of not being introspective at all, if that's the reason you're not making changes because, well, I just haven't thought about it and you're just continuing on with your day-to-day routine, yeah, maybe that should be an opportunity then, New Year's Eve, to take stock or whatever. Because it's not like I haven't made changes over the past year. In fact, I think about an app I installed on my phone just within the last few months that counts calories every day. I don't know if this happens to every male, but I know a lot of males at my age. I don't know what happens. You hit like that 46, 47. It's like your metabolism just stops. I don't know. Several of my friends have said the same thing. And we're all like, it's not like we're completely sedentary people, right? But it's just suddenly the food you eat just shows up everywhere. So I started counting calories and it was a great deal. I mean, it's been fantastic to use this little app on my phone, but that happened in like, you know, September or something, you know, October. Right. And so it's, if that had not happened, let's say, and I'm now New Year's, I'm thinking, yeah, I'm gaining weight. What's going on? We should be continually taking stock, I guess is what I'm saying. And if you haven't over the past year and now it's the new year and you still haven't, well, this might be a good opportunity to do that.
Well, and I think the biggest thing, if you have the sacraments in your life, especially the sacrament of the Eucharist and reconciliation, daily or at least weekly in your life, of, you know, the Eucharist and then bringing reconciliation. At least, you guys, the church is very serious. We need to be going to confession at least once a month, because that is like a constant reset of going, what am I taking stock of? What's going on? And once I start addressing these sins, it begins like a layer of onions, essentially, to go deeper and deeper. And you see, wow, there was actually something else I couldn't see because this was in the way, or I wasn't looking enough to see the challenges that I maybe was posing to myself and others by my behavior. And that's where the Catholic life is a constant renewal, essentially.
Yeah, that's right. If you practice the sacraments of the Catholic life and you do sort of what the church recommends as far as spiritual practices, mm-hmm. a lot of these things that the culture... it's not like they arbitrarily throw on us, but they put like, all right, it's New Year's. You got to make a resolution. You got to do these certain things. And you're like, oh, why? The Catholic Church already has that built in. So that's a great point.
I think that the church is here. And this is what's so great. The first day of the new year, holy day of obligation, boom, Theotokos, Mary, the Mother of God. She brings Christ to the world. She brings God, right, in his physical form to us. And I think that in and of itself is a reminder for us, because it's in the midst of the Christmas season of what we too are now called to do. Recognize Our Lady bringing Christ, directing us toward Christ, and now bring him to others.
It is amazing how the liturgical year of the Catholic Church is so sometimes surprising, but so helpful, right? So like the day after Christmas, you've got Stephen's Day, like the first martyr mm-hmm. of the church. You're like, celebrate Jesus. Oh, wait, it's like martyrdom first thing.
But it's even worse, because then you have the Holy Innocents the day after. And I was even reading in the Magnificat, because I always end up getting one around Advent time. I usually don't have it. And it's nice, like a change of pace for prayer. And it was talking about how don't let us like romanticize Christmas, and don't be like, you know, all sentimental. Like, here's martyrdom. This is what the Christian life was. Wake up.
Yeah. And I do think that it helps you stay out of those ruts, the rhythm of the liturgical year. And this is something, of course, you know, as a fairly new Catholic, right, just a few years into it, that I realized I was missing in my evangelical world, where they have done away with most of the liturgical calendar. It is much easier to just get stuck into a particular way of doing things, a particular rut, and you don't have these sort of built-in markers and adjustments throughout the year.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was reading, you know, a lot about New Year's resolutions and challenges that people have. I think the most difficult thing about any renewal or resolution or desire to do something is that we don't set up a battle plan, you know, for how we're going to make it happen. You know, I hear all the time people like, I'm going to start exercising in the new year.
Right.
Or I'm going to start, you know, losing weight or whatever it might be. But there's not a tangible way of going, okay, this is how we're going to do it. Whether you're writing it down and then sticking to it. In order to build a habit, you have to do it habitually. Not here and there. Not make an excuse. You have to do it regularly.
And have a specific way to do it. One of the easiest examples of this, one that I've used within the last couple of years, is your Bible reading plan. I know a lot of people that I saw, a comedian made a joke of this January 1st in the morning. He's like, hey, a quick shout out to everyone reading Genesis 1:1 this morning, you know, because everybody's like, yeah, this is the year I'm going to read through the Bible. And I've done that, and I've done it successfully, and I've also failed at it. And here's how you fail at it. You start in Genesis 1:1 and you think, yeah, I'm just going to do it. And you just start reading, right? That's almost doomed to failure, because you're going to get, even if you get as far as Leviticus, you're going to fail there, sort of thing. But on the other hand, let me recommend a really good resource for this. I believe the Coming Home Network actually puts this out. They probably took it from somewhere else, but a day-by-day reading. But it's not just all the way through the Bible, but it's a day-by-day reading plan where you get some Old Testament, some New Testament, some Psalms, and some wisdom literature, an aspect of each day, right? So you get four different ones, and throughout the year, you end up reading through the whole Bible, but you don't do it in a way where you're going to get bogged down, because you have parts, and I did it, and it's fantastic. So just that specific plan and doing it in a way that's realistic is super helpful.
There are also different groups that have the catechism too, where you can read catechism in the year as well.
In fact, I did that side by side, and that same reading plan from the Coming Home Network will give you both.
Awesome.
Yeah.
See, and that's where I think being realistic, but here's the thing. If you're going to try and read it on your phone, and you know that your phone's just going to be buzzing with text messages, and you're going to just get distracted, print it out, or maybe instead write down the verses and then go and read it, you know, a step away from your phone. I think sometimes our technology distracts us from the changes we're trying to make. And so even just recognizing I'm having to fast from my phone, because if I'm going to go and exercise for half an hour and someone calls me, I'm going to walk away from that treadmill or whatever it is. You've got to get yourself there and committed to that thing to build the habit. You can't be, you know, split in multiple areas.
Business Insider has a few more tips for us, and a couple of these I thought were pretty good. And their first one was only make New Year's resolutions if you really want to change. Psychologically, you got to want to do this. You can't be just like, yeah, it'd be nice to lose weight, but do I really care? They're like, you got to have the proper mindset starting out.
Right. And I think that that's where the mindset is first and foremost, is setting the goals with a SMART plan. And there was actually something I saw was SMART, and SMART stands for specific, meaningful, action-oriented, realistic, and time-based. So setting up your plan, be specific with what it is, and make sure it's something meaningful, have an action-oriented plan. Make sure it's realistic. Don't say like, I'm going to lose 100 pounds, you know, like
in January.
Yeah, right. Like, you don't set yourself up for failure, in other words. But Business Insider, some of the things it talks about are the three, basically psychology is talking about how it's really hard to break an old habit. One of the things I disagree with is it says replace it with another habit. Oh. So like, it was talking about someone, maybe if it's to an extreme of being an alcoholic, like maybe you're an alcoholic and you're drinking too much alcohol each day. Well, it said instead replace it with a sugary lollipop instead. That what happens is that's still almost in some ways encouraging an addictive behavior, right? You know, maybe you help wean yourself off, but psychology just also talk about how you have to stick to what the plan is that you've made.
Timmery and Dawn will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Dawn Johnson Media. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Dawn and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
So we're talking New Year's resolutions here on the show. Dawn and I are talking about how really, though, the Catholic faith is a total inspiration constantly with the renewal of the sacraments for regular resolutions. So this show isn't just relevant to January 1st, January 2nd, or maybe January 5th, where you're like, oh man, it's been 5 days, I still haven't exercised yet, or whatever it might be. But this is relevant to our entire life, whether we're trying to change our spiritual prayer life, whether we're trying to change how often we go to mass, or how we treat a significant other, whatever it might be. And so one of the first things that Business Insider talks about with, you know, looking at some of the help from psychologists is that essentially you are going to fail at your New Year's resolution. But I think really at anything in terms of wanting to having resolved to do something, if you don't have some sort of plan.
Right. Like something specific. So they say rather than exercise, for example, say I'm going to bike 30 minutes 4 days a week. And so you check them off. Can you do the 30 minutes? Can you do it four right. times a week? Can you schedule it into your calendar? All right, I'm going to do it. You know, not when my favorite show is planned or my podcast. And I'm going to listen to your podcast while you're on your bike, by right. the way. That's another way to do it or something like that. But have that specific plan laid out. And then, you know, speaking of failures, this is something they mentioned that I thought was pretty insightful. They suggest that some people actually prefer to fail because they,
this was interesting.
That they can brag about it in a sense, or at least establish a connection with other people who have also failed. And I think this actually, there is something to this, that nobody, you know, there is that sense in which just like, you know, when that person who's lost the 80 pounds puts their pictures on Instagram, you kind of get the sense you're like, maybe I prefer to sort of connect with this other person who hasn't lost the 80 pounds. And we might even talk a little smack about the person who has, and we can establish this sort of, yeah, it's okay not to achieve these things, right? This sort of like camaraderie of the lower level.
Misery enjoys misery.
Yeah.
It is so true. You know, you have like that pity party where you just keep on going back and forth and complaining and allow it to continue to build.
I do think there is something to people enjoying their state, because if they weren't in their state, they wouldn't have anything to complain about. And if you didn't have anything to complain about, what would you talk about?
Right.
There is that sense, like, people seem to like enjoy listing off the things that went wrong this past week and what's wrong with their life, and let's all get together and we can commiserate with each other. And you just think, C.S. Lewis was very insightful in a lot of his fiction about this, where you'd get people together, and if the angel comes along and wants to take away the things that they are complaining about, you know, and they're like, yeah, but what would I be left with? Right? Well, you're taking away my whole life. If I don't have the thing that I can complain about,
right,
what am I going to talk about, or what am I going to do? And this, I do think there's something to that, that people do tend to gravitate to their misery and take, it's almost like a comfort in misery, which is a strange thing.
Or makes them feel better about not making changes to their own life.
Right, right.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, is a great example of something to work on. If you think about it, you know, maybe you need to be around other people that inspire you more. And if you can't change the conversation, and not that they have to be like pleasurable to be around, but just negative people in your life all the time, it has an impact on you. Is that, you know, maybe that's a ministry, you know what I mean? And right, not actually a friendship. And that points to the importance of good friendships as well.
All right, so if those are some things that we should not do, but what are some of the New Year's resolutions that we should do? Have there been any in your past? You talked about the dancing, and have there been any? Like, I talked about Bible reading and the catechism. That was a great one for me. It's one that a lot of people do. But you know what? If you can read through the Bible and the catechism, and I did it in just slightly over a year. I got a little bit behind, but about, I don't know, 16 months or something.
Right.
Have there been any that you think, yeah, this was a great deal?
You know, I can't really think of doing like a lot. I think in the past, my mindset is more so, someone was teasing me about this the other day, but I think of Christmas as the time to offer something up, like a spiritual renewal. So I think that's part of the reason I haven't often done a New Year's resolution, because in my mind, like, okay, Christmas, like, this is my gift to you. Like, Christ, you've given us everything. And so when I was much younger, one of them was, okay, I'm going to pray the rosary every day. I was pretty young when I decided to do that. And that was like, and I think it was for the next year. And from there, it built up a habit of praying the rosary daily. I think more so I did things like that, but my mindset was different, because to me, the new year wasn't really a good inspiration. And I think that's the case for a lot of people, which is why they don't hold to the New Year's resolution. Like, what was the purpose of this?
Right.
More so. And that's where the new year can be an inspiration for saying, okay, I'm going to spend 30 minutes a day in prayer, or I'm going to, you know, pray just a little bit of one book of the Bible a day. Sometimes I think that's more realistic. I think that's awesome. If you are setting your sight at praying the whole Bible, pull up the resources, do it. However, I think sometimes just the opportunity to start praying the Bible regularly, start with picking one book from the New Testament. You know, you have the short little epistles. It'll feel really nice when you finish, you know, that short, you know, 8-chapter epistle within a week, or maybe 2 weeks, or maybe just within a couple of days, because you set your mind to stopping doing it. And then pick another bigger book, maybe from the Old Testament then, and bounce back and forth between the Old and New Testament. And now you're at least starting to do something. Another big one is going to Mass. You may decide, I'm going to go to Mass every day. Right. Now, I will say, this is how I started going to daily Mass. I was 16. I had just gotten my license. It was it was Lent. I said, OK, I'm going to Mass every day. I went to Mass every day. And from there, it built a habit, you know, 40 straight days.
Yeah,
the
1 month, 40 day thing is huge. If you can get that 40 days in, you're sort of locked in almost.
And I think that's why it's important. If you set a New Year's resolution, do it for the whole month. Don't give up. Reevaluate at the end, but do it for the whole month.
Right. And if you can't do daily Mass, I mean, this is not something that should be guilt-inducing either, right?
Right.
Like, I'm not going to make it to daily Mass, but it's right. Not that I shouldn't try harder, but you got to be in the right situation. All right, here's a couple. Psychology Today, we just talked about specific ones, and their number one life-changing New Year's resolution was not entirely specific, I didn't think, but it was rather important. This is the one from Psychology Today. Says, the number one, be kind. How about that? I mean, what do you think about this? It's like, be kind, but yet that would be nice as you go around and interact. This is something, you know, I talked about my daughter starting work, you know, as a 16-year-old. She's in retail. There's a lot of people out there. Her eyes were open like, wow, there's a lot of nasty people in the world, aren't there? They're just not kind. And you think it's so simple, but yet if everybody was kind, That's pretty life-changing, actually.
I'm going to be a little mean for a second. The second I read it, I'm like, a woman wrote this, didn't she? Like, I'm sorry if anyone's sitting here going, that's so sexist, but a woman totally wrote this. And it's great, but she did. And sure enough, it was a female author.
Now, why wouldn't a guy write that?
A guy wouldn't just be like, the best New Year's resolution is to be kind. It's like come on.
What? No?
Would you write that?
Okay, probably not. But I'd put it something like, you know, increase in virtue, like become a better person. And when you become a better person, here's the thing. I mean, how do we know who are the better people in the world, right? It's those that are kind. And because the reason you're kind is because you're esteeming the other person above yourself right now. When you're not kind, you're saying, I've got particular needs and wants and desires right now, and I don't care about you, and you better fulfill them, or I'm going to be angry. I mean, that's sort of what it boils down to. So kindness is essentially a position of humility, generally towards another person.
Absolutely.
Which is, of course, an increase in virtue. So yes, I would have said, you know, like, increase your virtue, become the right kind of person in the new year. I might not have, but if you
I think
can,
it's good.
If you can do that just on a practical level, like stop snapping at your retail clerk or whatever, right? Or flipping people off on the freeway or whatever. I mean, that does put you in the right frame of mind.
Well, it sets you apart. And this is where kindness is something that we choose to do. And this is something that's talked about in the article. We don't always feel loving, but we can choose to be kind in the simple ways that we respond to other people. And I think sometimes it also starts with being kind to yourself. Sometimes people aren't kind to others because they can't see the goodness within themselves and be gentle with themselves at times. But I mean, you think about kindness and it's respecting the other person and yourself at the same time. No one should just walk around in a grumpy mood snapping at anyone. Realistically, that's a lack of emotional maturity, a lack of a psychological development. If you are being sharp with people, if people are scared of you, that means that there's something wrong with how you interact. We're called to be kind even when we're upset and having to address something serious.
Yeah, and this is a point where I did take a little bit of issue with this article. I just think they weren't, you know, overly theologically sophisticated, because they said, well, you can't love everyone, but you can be kind because kindness is a choice and love is an emotion that comes and goes. Well, of course, they're wrong about that, I believe, right? Like, what they're actually telling you to do is love your neighbor as yourself. What they're actually telling you to do in this article is love people, I think. And it shows itself through kindness. And so I wouldn't agree when they say, well, you know, you can't love everybody. No, actually, that's the one thing you can do. And that shows itself in kindness. Don't wait for those emotions to come around. Just make a decision that no matter how I'm feeling, we talk about this with my kids all the time, frankly, right? Like, they'll snap at somebody and, well, what was the reason for that? Well, maybe something else happened previous. Okay.
That doesn't matter.
That does not matter. It does not give you the right to treat that other person the way you just did, right? So you have to make a choice to love and be kind regardless of your emotional state. And that's tough, but that's ultimately what it's about. So I think what they're actually asking us to do is love, which, hey, right, if that's your New Year's resolution, love one another. Yeah, that comes from the highest sources. I think
absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and I think that's what made me laugh is the article was really good, but I'm like, most people are going to stop reading this, unfortunately, because they're like, right, the greatest New Year's resolution is to be kind. But before we go to the break, and we'll talk more about New Year's resolutions, one of the great ones, Facebook Live. For anyone listening, you can always go back and check out our Facebook Live videos. Jim Sheridan's talking about how he's trying to follow Pope Francis's guidelines by resolving to downsize his material possessions.
Ooh.
And really looking at things as clutter. This is a great one, because the reality is we have so many things that we may use, but we don't actually need.
Timmery and Don will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Don Johnson Media. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending.
Trending.
With Don and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
So, Don, we have some great input from people on Facebook Live because I love to hear the interactions from the listeners of what you guys are going through, maybe what your challenges are, but also successes of resolutions because, again, the Catholic life is a constant life of renewal, a life of asceticism, a life of penance. This is part of who we are. And I think the new year should be a reminder of what we should be doing daily. And, you know, before I jump into one of these, we were talking about daily mass earlier. If you're choosing to go to daily mass, maybe start with something like picking one day a week where you know you can make it to daily mass. And then guess what? If you don't make it, you have all the way through, even Saturday mornings, although some churches unfortunately don't have Saturday morning daily mass, to make it to daily mass. So maybe you pick a Wednesday. You didn't make it Wednesday. You should. It's only one day a week, right? Yeah. Go one of the other days and you're continuing to build that habit.
Yeah. Again, it's looking at your calendar, seeing where you can fit it in and placing it there. I guess what we're trying to say is the general, like, well, okay, I'm going to try to get to mass more often this year or whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, chances are that's not going to happen. But if you say, all right, I'm going to do one day a week and I'm going to do it on Thursday noon or whatever,
right,
or whatever you can fit it in. That's what I'm going to do this first week. And then next week, yeah, Thursday still works, maybe every week. But yeah, the specific steps and just a small step one time.
Right. Really great. Simple. So here's one. Barbara is commenting on Facebook Live and she's saying, you know, she has all these things to do. She wants to be more organized so that she can streamline her life. But she's a wife, a homeschooling mom, a business owner, and also a volunteer at the church, among many other things that we have to do every day. And she says it's just difficult, essentially, to stay on task. And while it's easy to be organized for a short period of time, it, you know, life happens and that becomes difficult. So thoughts for, I mean, you too, Don, you know, you,
sounds familiar.
Yeah,
yes.
You work, you homeschool your kids. This is a great one for you.
Yeah, I think prioritize. Don't think that, I mean, I don't know. My wife and I have, we're organized, but we're not like A-type organized, you know, like we have friends who are over the top organized. Yeah, we're just not quite there. I think personality wise, we do our best and we do the homeschooling and she works and I work and it's a lot of stuff. I think over the years, what we have done is said, all right, what do we think is most important and what follows? And are we getting the most important thing? Yes. All right. What's next after that? If we tend to focus on things that ultimately aren't as important. All right. So, you know, do my kids need to get perfect on every single exam they're going to do this year? And do they have to have, you know, the Latin by the time they're in sixth grade? I mean, this was my thoughts, you know, early on when I started homeschooling. I'm like, yes, they're all going to know Latin by the time they're in sixth grade. And that didn't work out. I mean, we tried it, you know, they know a bit of Latin, but they're not all fluent in Latin by the time they're in sixth grade. And right. It came down to it just wasn't physically possible. So we prioritized and we said, all right, well, what are they going to do? Well, they're going to read really well. And they do read really well. They're going to, we're going to try to increase their virtue. They're going to be outside, right? These are just some of the things that as a family, we've decided. I prioritize making sure that you are exploring the world more than I'm going to prioritize maybe every single academic achievement. Yeah.
Right.
And this is from, you know, my wife and I are both college grads. I mean, it's not like we're deprioritizing the academics, but I just think it's impossible. I mean, the pressure is, you can't do everything, right? Like
right.
Maybe some people can, we couldn't. I think it's okay, right? It's okay to accept that. Listen, we're not going to be perfect. We're not going to get everything done, but let's make sure that we have our priorities aligned
properly. And my mom took much of the same approach with homeschooling me. You know, there were specific things that were focused on more in homeschooling. But I think with being organized, and again, I do not have a family. So I think, you know, someone could say, ooh, but at least in my own life, you know, I work full time. I volunteer a ton of work as well. And I work more than full time. And so I understand it's hard to just like keep things in line. And for me, having those periods of time where I just stop for a second allows me to refocus. So even if that's maybe 1 hour where you go to adoration, maybe that's what you can handle. Maybe you can only go for half an hour in 1 week. You know, maybe if you're younger and you're not single, or maybe you don't have children yet, maybe you could go for 15, 20 minutes a day before daily mass, if that's something you do. But stopping to slow down helps me to see what's important that day and allow myself to be okay with not getting other things done. You know, I get tons of text messages every day. It can be quite overwhelming. I think today most people do. I've had to get to the point where I'm like, does this really need to be read or addressed right now? Because the reality is I'm called to be present in the moment and be doing the will of God, not necessarily allowing myself to be distracted in other directions at the moment.
Excellent. So that quiet time or whatever you want, like just some time to make sure that you're getting input, you know, that you're listening to God, whatever that right. might be. And if the laundry doesn't get done, but you get that time in, I think that's, you know, that's definitely something we've applied in our own life where, you know what, the laundry will get done eventually and we get it done. But if it's a day late or whatever, that's okay. But we try not to miss that, like you said, that whatever, how much ever time you can
however
fit
much
in.
Time it is. And, you know, here's one of the things that someone was commenting. I'm reading through some of the Facebook comments. Someone was talking about the importance of maybe being in sync with another person. So having a buddy. Having a buddy like Facebook Live, this is great. Doing something together. I have two dear friends right now who are on an awesome journey. And I think a lot of people look at it as, oh, you guys are just trying to lose weight. But they're actually not just trying to lose weight. They are working on, we want to be better men. And being better men requires more discipline. And with more discipline, it's changed the way they look at food. It's changed, you know, it's less pleasure and more so a matter of I need this for survival. And so sometimes they even make stuff that's kind of not that great. It's like a mush. And they're like, but this is good for me.
And this is the key. This is the key to weight loss, by the way. Have nothing but terrible food put in front of you all day. That's the, you know what? You'll be surprised. The pounds, they just fly off. Just bad food all day.
But one of the things I like that they started, they're like, okay, this month, this is how we're going to start this. We're going to start by waking up at 5 o'clock every day. Next month, we're going to start with changing this part in our diet. They're up to waking up at 4 a.m. every day, and they've been doing it for months.
Clearly, they're insane.
But to them, they're going, this is a lifestyle, though. And I think that that's where we have to set something like practical with how we do it. Yeah. And they're encouraging each other. And it wasn't just about losing weight. It's about we want to be more disciplined, better men.
Yeah, the partnership thing is huge. I mean, not just accountability. I think that's one of the main things that people focus on. And
right.
Yes, absolutely. Whether accountability, I mean, is almost essential to all of these projects. Like you have to have some way to keep yourself accountable and to measure your progress. I would suggest that's the app thing is wonderful for that, whether
right.
it's exercise or eating or daily Bible reading or whatever. A lot of great apps really help you with that, or spending money. Maybe you want to spend less money this year
right.
and you just say, oh, I'm just not going to spend. Well, if you actually start plugging in your money in an app, you'll be surprised at where you can save money. So the accountability thing is huge. But I think what you're saying is even beyond that, just the encouragement and the fellowship and all that stuff that goes together is also really important.
Absolutely. And you mentioned financially, one of the big ones that I think is awesome for a phone app is a Mint. It's an excellent budgeting tool. You can set all of your budgets, and especially for millennials, you know, I was talking to my siblings about this the other day. I said, you know, the old way of teaching people how to manage money was you have envelopes, right? And you have a certain
cash.
Amount of money that goes up
yeah,
cash, it goes
right,
into the envelopes.
Right.
I think a lot of millennials struggle with budgeting because that isn't something that they will ever necessarily use, or, you know, everything's on your card. And so having that online presence and noticing what my budget is, having the organized element of that and sticking to it.
Psychology Today offers us some specific helpful hints to find happiness in the year. And you think, you know, the other one was, what's your number one resolution? Be kind, love one another. And then they suggest, what does everybody want more than anything? Happiness. And you think, oh, those are general and sort of like sappy and generic. But actually, isn't that what we're all after? I mean, ultimately, we're made for happiness and we're made for love. I love it when other sciences affirm what Scripture and the church have been teaching us all this time. Like, they line up with reality. So anyway, Psychology Today says, if you want to be happy, here are some of the things that you need to do. One is pursue a more meaningful life. And this one strikes me as, well, yeah, if you find yourself just existing, right? If you're just out there going day to day, making some money, watching some TV, playing some games, whatever it is, and you just think, well, what am I doing all this for? Yeah, if your life doesn't have purpose, that might be the thing that you need to focus on above all. And I would suggest that what you want to do ultimately is align yourself with reality. Your life does have a purpose. And this is where a lot of these psychology articles sometimes miss the boat because they don't bring in so much theology. But ultimately, it's not that you're going to go out and find a purpose for your life.
Right.
Your life has purpose. You were made with a meaning. What you want to do is align yourself with God's purpose for you. Now, does he give you free will to do certain things within your life? Of course, right? Are you gifted to do certain things? Yes. Is it up to you to sort of discover those? Yeah, of course. All of those things. But just a mindset where I'm going to surrender my life this year to whatever God has for me, I think is the starting point to happiness. Like if you want to find meaning and purpose and happiness, that starting point is going to have to be, am I open to whatever God has for me? And this is something that maybe we don't, you know, we sort of skip that part. We're just like, well, that would be too much out of my comfort zone. I'm going to, you know, well, no, just that surrender, open to whatever, is a huge starting point, I think.
I absolutely agree with you. You know, so often I think people are struggling in their careers because they lack purpose. And starting with that purpose of, I'm created to be with God. Like, I'm made in his image and likeness with intellect and free will so that I can use my intellect and free will to be with him. That's your ultimate purpose. But then understanding, you know, how your daily life, maybe you're married, your purpose is to get your spouse to heaven and to raise your children in the faith, not to force them to choose God, but to raise your children in the faith to help teach them right from wrong. Because remember, we're made with intellect and free will. And that's where, you know, now you have the responsibility to rear your children while they are with you, you know. And I think that that's where you see purpose for people who are maybe single and they're struggling to see that.
Timmery and Dawn will be right back. Tweet them at Timmery. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. And at Dawn Johnson Media. From the Southern California studios of Relevant Radio, you're listening to Trending with Dawn and Timmery, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
So Psychology Today also had this piece talking about the three P's to your resolution. So your New Year's resolution, God willing, is a reminder that every day in the Catholic life, we are being called to renew ourselves and make ourselves new because Christ has made us a new creation. This is what's so awesome about Christmas is he radically changed the makeup of how the human person saw themselves. We suddenly became people that we saw our own worth. And so now as we're talking about these three P's of purpose, I agree and disagree at the same time with some of what we're seeing. This one is the three P's that's being discussed about the resolution are pleasure, purpose, and pride. And it was really a big, I think, letdown to me that pleasure was the first one because I hear what she's saying, but I think it can be articulated differently. It talks about how basically we all want more happiness. And to be more happy, we need to implement more meaning and more pleasure. And so it enters into that purpose area. But when it's talking about pleasure, it's like, yeah, get your mani-pedis, do the things right. You love so that you can feel better about yourself. But I'm saying, no, don't go and do those things. Do things that bring out your gifts, that make you happy, that make you a better person. You know, I think instead of calling them, you know, do what's pleasurable, do your joy activities. What makes you a joyful person?
Yeah, that's a big difference between equating happiness with a feeling that you're going to get and primarily a physical feeling that may be accompanied by some emotions.
Right.
But what we're talking about here when they say pleasure is essentially physical pleasure. So go get your body worked on in a way that makes you feel good for an hour or two and make sure you're doing that every week. Well, I mean, I'm not downplaying that. There's nothing wrong with feeling pleasure. But first, does that equate to happiness? And I think you're right. That does not equate actually to happiness, at least not in a theological sense. And what would then actually equate to happiness? Because if you're only equating pleasure with happiness, which is what has happened in our sort of materialistic worldview, right? As we have reduced everything in reality to just matter, what do you and I end up as? Just pleasure machines, right? I mean, if the end of life, you die and that's it. If you're just a hunk of matter on this planet, this rock hurtling through space for no apparent reason, and when you die, that's it. Well, what's the end of life? By that, I mean, what's the meaning of life? What is your purpose? And this is where they're sort of trying to equate pleasure and purpose. And is the end of your life anything beyond just having as much pleasure as possible before you die? If so, then what is that? And that's where, as Christians, we come in and say, oh, no, we have a much more robust view of happiness and joy than this.
So you see how frustrating it was to see. I mean, I literally, this is a quote from it. The overall experience of both pleasure and meaning is what happiness is.
Yeah, no.
No, no. That, like, you guys, this is what's so crazy. When you take God out of the picture, your sole means of happiness is pure pleasure. Even if it's a matter of implementing virtue that are non-faith based, it's a matter of it makes me feel good to do this. And that's what's so damaging, I think, in today's culture, is that we've lost a sense of purpose, which is one of her P's, which a purpose brings, you know, where is the foundation? What is part of who we are? And then she talks about pride. And when she talks about pride, I thought this was a good one. It's taking pride in who you are, taking pride in caring for your own body. It's not that we are prideful people. It's that we are proud to care for our bodies. You know, our body is, it's a temple of the Holy Spirit. We're body and soul.
Yes, of course, you're right. Now, without that, though, if it isn't a temple of the Holy Spirit, if it isn't something created in the image of God, if we are not ultimately this body, spirit, soul amalgam that God created for his glory, if none of those things are true, then what does it mean? This is another one of those where, what does it mean that you take pride in your body or yourself? And it's a tough one, right? Without God in the picture, you know, that they have little like snippets like, well, yeah, pleasure feels good. Can that provide us meaning? Well, no. So we should take pride in our bodies. What does that mean without God?
Right.
That we decorate them and put them on display for other people to ogle? Well, no. I mean, not that. Okay, so what, right? Without the God factor here, without the good theology, they're struggling. They realize that, okay, we need something more. But what is it?
So then where's your motivation? It's funny because we had a long conversation, a couple friends of mine the other day, about motivation and whether or not motivation, you can have a bad motivation, something bad motivating you. Motivation in and of itself is kind of neutral. It's, you know, what makes you move on that motivation, inspiring you. And I think that a lot of the time we have improper motivations. Are we trying to lose weight just for the sake of fitting into something nice? Or is it for the purpose of being healthy? You know, these are things that I think we've got to change and look at what is our motivation for each and every single one of our resolutions. And if it's not perfected, work on making it better, because when you have a better motivation, you will be more proud of what you're working on.
Well, isn't it though? Of course, I agree with you, Timmy, but isn't it ultimately we have to have the true motivation? Like, why are you doing anything at all?
Right.
Right? Like, why do you get up in the morning and do whatever it is you do? Go to school, go to work, whatever you happen to do, take care of the kids. Why are you doing that? And that's downplayed in our society. We don't ask those questions, not the ultimate ones. We ask like temporary, smaller questions, like what's going to make you feel better today? Going to get the mani-pedi or whatever. No, why are you doing what you're doing in life? Because we ultimately, society tells us that it's all meaningless, really. They're not going to say that explicitly, but if you just peel away one or two layers, that is the goal. And I think that's why we have the huge issues, for example, with middle-aged men and suicide, even with teenage depression these days, because even if we're not explicitly told that, we get it. Teenagers are not dumb. We get it. They look at our situation and they're like, all right, now here's what you're telling me. You're telling me that I should get good grades so that I can get into a good school, so that I can get a good job, so that I can get money, so that I can do what? Watch a bigger screen TV and go on a bigger boat and go on nicer vacations. And what's that for? So I can sit on the beach and do what exactly? Sit there. Right? I mean, they see, you know, you just take that to its logical ends. I mean, is this all there is? Like, is this what I'm fighting for so I can sit on a beach somewhere? Because I'm not sure that that's really going to motivate me.
Right.
Ultimately, it is about getting to heaven. That's
right.
you got to realize that if it's not about getting to heaven and glorifying God and living with him in his presence and enjoying that ultimate state, the beatific vision, right? If that's not what your life is lined up to end up doing, then we need to reevaluate, because your motivations may be off then.
Here's something that someone posed to me a number of years ago that I think personally radically changed the way I looked at my daily life. Every day, it can be hard to get up in the morning, whether it's you're pressing snooze, maybe you have lack motivation, maybe you're lonely, whatever it might be. But I remember when I was in school, someone said, every day, offer your day for a different person in prayer. So today, I have a hard time, you know, jumping out of bed, wanting to press that snooze button to go, okay, I'm getting out of bed now. And this whole day, I am offering it for this person. And I offer this person to you, Lord, and the good that I do, let it be for them. The suffering that I do, let it be endured for them. I think that that's something that can start with. Maybe you didn't make a New Year's resolution, but you can change with that one little thing.
Right.
And that's what I was reminded of when I read this piece you sent over from the Angelus News, talking about the micro shift, 14 minutes of your day.
Yeah. So they set it up saying that maybe not tackle the big, huge things. But if you can just shift your life for a very small amount of time or do a very small thing, that this can lead you to bigger things. They give some examples here. So make a sandwich or box up leftovers and offer it to a homeless person you pass on the way to work or school. So I'm looking at that. I'm like, well, how long does it take to make a sandwich? I don't know, 5 minutes. And they pass the person on your way. So there's like less than 6 minutes of your day, probably. But you're shifting. In one sense, you're shifting in a micro sense, but in another, that's a big deal, actually. If you make a sandwich every day and hand it out to homeless people, I know your family does this sort of thing, actually, Timmery. That's a huge mental shift that can have great consequences. So they give several of these kind of just little tiny things that you can do, but that can have a huge impact.
Absolutely. And you know, you look at it, 1% of your day is that 14 minutes. You know, maybe you do 0.5% of your day, you know, looking at your day and going, in 14 minutes, I can pray a rosary. The church kicked off the new year with Mary, the Mother of God, the Theotokos, the reminder of Jesus's human and divine nature, and that Mother Mary was the mother of him. Let's spend the year with Our Lady. Maybe 15 minutes to pray a daily rosary. Maybe 14 minutes you can do, you know, the divine office, liturgy of the hours, night prayer. You can do that in 6 minutes. Do it every single night. You know, whatever it might be, it just takes a few minutes. And that's where, again, having this eternal mindset, like Christ came and the kingdom of heaven is now. How are we participating in that?
So one of the questions I started asking myself, and I continue to as I look at my life, you think, all right, the thing that I'm participating in right now, at the end of time, we're all in heaven, and we look back, will that thing still be there? In the sense that, will it have burned up and will it have been nothing? Or will it have lasted for eternity? And some things last for eternity. The love you gave to whoever, the love you gave to your child, that lasts for eternity because people last forever, right? Mm-hmm. The gospel you preached to someone that got them into heaven, that lasts forever. That story you told that changed somebody's life, that lasts forever. The 6 minutes you spent scrolling Facebook, you're probably not going to be there in heaven unless some sort of article happened to hit you, right? There's a lot of things we do that will, and this is a scriptural notion, they get burned up in the flames, right? Some of our works get burned up in the flames. I would suggest in the new year, concentrate on things that are going to last for eternity, that you'll be able to look back on. You and Jesus can smile at them and say, look at how that has become even more solid and bigger than you thought. Are we aligning ourselves with things that will last eternally, or are we spending all of our time on things that are going to burn up?
From the studios of Relevant Radio, this has been Trending with Don and Timmery. Trending. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timmery Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timmery.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.